Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Claire Woodcock. Today we hear from the candidates for two Glenwood Springs City Council races. One candidate from the Aspen mayor race is forced to withdraw.
And a lease extension for a local art gallery that rents city space is debated by the Aspen City Council.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. Pitkin County is looking for input on how to manage a historic property near Basalt. Elizabeth reports.
The Emma Open Space property includes a historic home site and agricultural land that spans nearly 80 acres on both sides of Highway 82. The county acquired the town site in 2008 and has owned fields near the Rio Grande Trail since 2000. This is the first time that the public has a chance to give input on how the historic buildings can be used. The public property does not include the historic schoolhouse. The fields are now used for cattle operations and to grow potatoes for a local distillery. This area, including a wildlife-specific underpass under Highway 82, also serves as a migration corridor. Public can give input at an open house Thursday evening from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Basalt Town Hall.
On April 4th, Ward 5 in Glenwood Springs will elect a city council member. There are three candidates vying for the four-year term: Amber Wissing, Don Gillespie, and Jonathan Godis. Wyatt Orm spoke with each of them individually, asking them the same questions. Here are their answers.
Name, please.
Amber Wissing.
Jonathan Godis.
Don Gillespie.
Your age?
75.
39.
37.
Occupation?
Executive Director of the Early Childhood Network.
Right. President of a valet at the Valley View Hospital.
I manage the dental practice of Dr. Corey Johnson.
Favorite U.S. president and why?
Favorite U.S. president and why?
John F. Kennedy, because he got us to the moon.
What I really liked about Bill Clinton was he created a cabinet that disagreed with each other.
I would have to say John F. Kennedy, because he awakened the public into getting involved in politics.
Do you have any prior experience serving local government?
Serving as an elected position, no, but I did work for the city of Aspen for 3 years as the assistant director for Parks and Recreation.
I was on city council from 1999 to 2003. Then I was on the transportation commission for almost 12 years, the tourism board for 6 years.
Do you have any prior experience with local government?
I do not. I have managed a dental practice for 14 years. However, I have served on my HOA board for 8, so I've had experience with city government from a resident's perspective.
If you could accomplish 3 things during your term as city council person, what would those things be?
Well, the first thing is I would get the rock mitigation on Midland Avenue out in our Ward 5 completed. Second, I want them to take a real hard look at the confluence of 8th Street. I don't want to see it built out fully. I'd rather see more of a 90% use of recreational use there. Third, I want them to take a long, long look at the South Bridge.
Are you in opposition to a South Bridge?
Yes.
The 3 things I try to accomplish would be Midland, reconstructing Midland, a South Bridge south of the airport, to relieve the congestion on Midland and 4 Mile, and really look at what we can do regionally with affordable housing. There's the we gots to have stuff, which is Midland and Southbridge in my ward, and then there's the nice to have stuff. And I put the confluence at the very top of the nice to have stuff.
I think there's some big ticket items that probably all the Ward 5 candidates talked about. We're talking about Midland and Southbridge and infrastructure, and I do think those are big neighborhood topics. But from my perspective, Glenwood is my hometown, and I think there's some big things coming up as far as how downtown is redeveloped and how the confluence comes together that I think are going to be legacy items. And it's really important to me that we do these things with excellence.
How do you do them with excellence?
I think that you require all of the elements to be, you know, high quality. I think that you require a lot of foresight in the planning, that we don't just stop short and say, well, this will do us for 10, 15, 20 years.
You know, if you were walking around Glenwood in 10 or 20 years, God willing, What would kind of the fruits of your labors look like?
Well, I'd hope that people would still continue to think about it as a small town. I guess that's my main idea of the future, is that it hasn't lost its identity.
I know that you can't match the passion and love I have for Glenwood Springs. Neither Don nor Jonathan are able to do that. I love it. We're not staying 1964. We're moving forward. And so we have to do that in a balanced way. And I know that I'm that candidate.
I don't want this town 20, 30, 40 years from now to be viewed as a place for retirees and people of means only. I think a vibrant community needs diversity, and we are going to lose that if we don't start addressing some of these larger scale social issues.
That was Jonathan Godis, Amber Wissing, and Don Gillespie speaking with Wyatt Orm. They're all running for Glenwood Springs City Council representing Ward 5. To listen to longer versions of the interviews, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Claire Woodcock. Stay in the know for what's happening in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond through our social media channels. Follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook for up-to-the-minute news updates, compelling images, and intriguing stories. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
On Monday, Aspen City Council debated a lease extension for a local art gallery that rents city space. The conversation got heated. Claire reports.
City Council member Bert Myron suggested at the meeting that the city reduce a lease extension for Valley Fine Arts from 5 years to 2. The owner of this local art gallery rents from city-owned space in the Wheeler Opera House building. Here's Mayor Steve Skadron's response to his colleague's suggestion.
I'm sorry to show up in a public meeting and drop this atom bomb on a locally serving business. I think it's ruthless and wrong, and it should have been discussed prior to this meeting. And me, I'm sorry if this has given you heart palpitations, which I would be furious if I was sitting in your seat.
Owner Mia Valley signed a 5-year lease with the city in 2011, which could be extended for an additional 5 years at the tenant's option. The council approved the extension. Myron says the council should explore using this as an incubator space for other local businesses in the future.
The conversation probably needs to start in 2 years or so, if it takes a couple years to get something secured, so that when that lease comes up in 2021, there's a fair process the community feels for allocating that community resource.
Valley has been renting this space since 2006. Myron says it's unfair for Valley to pay $88 a square foot when a space across the street commands $150 per square foot on the free market.
The unofficial kickoff to election season in Aspen is Lottery Day, when the order in which the candidates' names will appear on the ballot is determined. Reporter Allison Bektesh was there last Thursday for the drawing and brings us this report.
City Clerk Linda Manning stands ready in the empty city council chambers in the basement of City Hall. Earlier, she had sauntered across the street to Peach's Cafe, where she randomly recruited Andy Curtis and Danielle Arca to conduct the lottery drawing.
Too funny.
And then she came and asked me, and I was like, yes, I'll do it.
The two strangers left their bags and breakfast at the coffee shop and entered City Hall just before 9:30 a.m.
No, I'm glad to help. This is exciting. I've never been part of the lottery day before. Maybe I'll do this every year.
I actually had jury duty this morning, and when I reported, they had canceled the case. So I felt like this is another opportunity for me to fulfill my civic duty.
During particularly contentious public hearings, council chambers can be packed to the gills with all the seating filled up and citizens standing along the back of the room. This morning, though, only two observers are present. Mayoral candidate Cale Mitchell and Councilmember Ann Mullins, who is running for another 4-year term.
Right. Well, we'll just start. So we'll do mayor first.
Each
so
candidate's name is on a piece of paper on display on a table in the middle of the room. Manning reads each name to ensure all candidates have a corresponding name tag. She then folds up the scraps and places them into a festive bowl with red, white, and blue stars printed on it, adding a patriotic flair to the ceremony. Curtis drew first, choosing the pecking order for the mayoral ballot.
This is top of the ballot.
Yes, number
very
one.
Very excited. Cale.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay. Congrats.
Second up, Steve Skadron.
Okay.
And last but not least, Lee McCulhey.
Okay.
That was exciting.
Arco was tasked with pulling the six names for city council.
Which
position is this for?
This is for one.
Skippy Mesereau.
Okay. Number two.
And with that, the fanfare was over.
All right.
Thank you.
That concludes our lottery. Thank you to our fabulous volunteers.
Thank you.
Welcome.
It was exciting.
Yeah, it was great.
My hands got a little sweaty. I thought I was going to drop one.
For all its pomp, Lottery Day lasts for about 1 minute. It was so fast, in fact, that City Council candidates Skippy Mesereau, Tory, and Attorney Jim True all arrived too late for the action. Tory, who has previously sat on council and run for mayor, teased Manning about the unexpected efficiency.
Man, you are the only person that starts something actually on time in City Hall. What do you think you're doing?
Clerks don't mess around.
With the official order that candidates will be listed on the ballot determined, Manning can now go about a slew of tasks leading up to the spring municipal election. Sample ballots will be online this week, and ballots get sent in the mail on April 10th. This is the second all-mail-in ballot election for the city of Aspen. Manning says that bodes well for higher participation.
We're hoping for a big turnout. The last election in 2015, we were 2 votes shy of having our biggest turnout, and that was the first all-mail ballot election that we had. So, you know, the mail ballot definitely helps.
There are 6,300 registered voters within Aspen city limits. On average, 30 to 35% of them actually participate in the local elections. Election research has shown that the order in which candidates' names appear on a ballot can be highly influential on the outcome, with the first name winning most often. By coincidence, the top of the ticket for both the mayoral and city council races this year are 30-year-old first-time candidates. Skippy Mesereau leads the city's Next Generation Commission and Planning and Zoning Commission. He has thrown his hat in the ring for one of 2 open spots on city council.
There's no time where local government matters more, where we should be more motivated to show up, to participate, to activate as a citizenry.
Cale Mitchell is going all out in his first foray into politics, running for mayor of Aspen. He grew up here and says while it's nice to be at the top of the ballot, he doesn't necessarily need the boost in name recognition.
I am not going to be shy about saying I have very little experience, but I have been a part of this community. I'm able to kind of hear what people are asking me and respond in a way that I think that I can change things.
Manning encourages those who like to wait until the last minute to vote in person at City Hall instead of walking in their mail ballot. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Cale Mitchell had the luck of the draw on lottery day. This week, though, a dozen feet made all the difference for a technicality that has caused him to withdraw his name from the mayoral race. Allison Bektesh explains.
Cale Mitchell is an Aspenite. He moved here in grade school and has been here for 2 decades. However, the residence that he and his wife lived in earlier this year is just on the outside of the official city limits, which disqualifies him from running for mayor. The mistake was discovered yesterday when he went to change his voter registration to his new address at the Centennial Apartments.
So I ran over back to City Hall, went and met with Jim True, the city attorney, and the house across 82 is in the jurisdiction, and the house I was at was not.
A candidate needs to live within the Aspen city limits for a full year at the time of submitting their name for office. City Clerk Linda Manning says it was a regrettable oversight and that all other candidates have the proper qualifications to run for office. Mitchell says he will continue to stay involved in Aspen politics and will work on a landslide win for 2019. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Next week, Glenwood Springs residents will choose one of the 4 at-large city council candidates. They are Rick Davis, Shelley Kaup, Jonathan Gorst, and Charlie Willman. Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm spoke with each of them individually, asking them the same questions. Here are their answers.
Your name, please.
Shelley Kaup.
Your age?
I am 56 years old.
Charlie Willman. I am 66.
My name is Jonathan Gorst, 44.
Rick Davis, 66.
Occupation?
I'm retired, but I work part-time in maintenance.
I'm the owner of the Riviera Supper Club and Piano Bar.
I'm an attorney.
I am an energy efficiency advisor and sustainability consultant.
If you could accomplish 3 things as over the course of being a city councilman, what would those be?
Well, the first thing is that we have to finish the Grand Avenue Bridge. The second thing, and I think it's equally as important, is fixing the infrastructure in the city. And the third thing, and even more difficult, is solving the transportation and housing issues.
Number 1, to revitalize the downtown core.
number two, to work on the South Bridge and that project with the state and county authorities. And number three, to establish a performing arts center here in Glenwood Springs that serves the community.
We are short on affordable housing. We also need to work on the childcare issues and just overall the crunch of traffic.
The first one would really be to establish a welcome feeling with the city council at large so that when citizens came in, they would feel comfortable. Number two, we have on our voting coming up right now a pot tax. The thing that I would really like to see is that Glenwood work out something with CMC that we can sponsor the first 2 years of any graduating student from our town, pick up the tuition, pick up the books. And the third thing would be the recycling that we had recently lost in town. Make it easy for the people in Glenwood to go one place or another, to drop off their daily use of things.
How big of a deal is the confluence to you?
It's only a concern if it becomes a question of overdeveloping it. To me, the confluence is a natural, beautiful place that can really be something that has the look of the gateway to the Roaring Fork Valley. I think it would be a mistake to put a lot of shops and restaurants on it.
The confluence is a very big deal. It's one of our projects that we can look to in the future as a way to grow Glenwood Springs and help define who we are.
I mean, what would you like to see happen there?
I'd like to see us put it out for either regional or, you know, nationwide design competition so that we can get ideas from across the country. How do people develop a beautiful piece of property that sits at the confluence of two incredible rivers?
The confluence has really been studied a lot. The city a couple of years ago, along with the Sonoran Institute, really looked closely at the way to make that and activate that. And that was with a lot of citizen input. So people that talk about design competitions, I think are really missing the boat. I don't think we need that. I think we have, you know, a good idea of what the citizens want.
I think that if we keep a lot of that area open, if we create access to the rivers, and maybe have some very specific little projects for some housings, or I think that would be beautiful, and it would be such a great thing for our town if we could do that right.
Why do you think that you're the best person for the job?
I think that I have a proven track record of really listening.
I was the music director for the national tours of Cats and the Phantom of the Opera from Broadway, and I spent 17 years on the touring circuit, traveling through the greatest cities in the United States, and got to see how those downtown cores really worked. I think that's one of the most unique perspectives that I can bring to the table.
I really get things done. When I was on the Downtown Development Authority, we got things done. It was a fairly inactive organization before that. And I'm going to take that same ability to get things done into a city council. How are we going to make this city good so that 20 years from now, people would look back and say, hey, those people did a good job?
I just feel like I bring kind of a vision for the whole community and wanting it to be developed into the strongest place that Glenwood Springs can be.
That was Shelley Kaup, Charlie Willman, Jonathan Gorst, and Rick Davis speaking with Wyatt Orm. They're all running for Glenwood Springs City Council as at-large candidates. If you'd like to listen to extended versions of the interviews, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. While you're browsing our site, make sure to sign up for ForkFed, our weekly digital newsletter. ForkFed arrives in your inbox every Friday afternoon, catching you up on the week's news in a fun and informative way. Lawmakers have reached the point in their annual 120-day session where they take up the budget. It grew by roughly 4% compared to last year, but as correspondent Benta Berkland reports, it still doesn't keep up with the state expenses.
The Joint Budget Committee crafts the budget, which is known as the Long Bill. It funds all of state spending. Democratic Representative Millie Hamner of Dillon is the vice chair of the committee. She says this year was especially difficult because the committee bumped up against the spending limit allowed under the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or TABOR. It restricts spending to inflation plus population growth. And then
we started looking at the critical needs that were emerging into this budget. The amount of money far exceeded the amount of revenue that we had available. So that was our biggest problem from the beginning.
The state constitution requires lawmakers to pass a balanced budget. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Carrie Donovan represents a portion of the Western Slope, including Aspen and Basalt, in the Colorado State House. Recently, two bills she introduced regarding broadband access were defeated on party lines. The senator spoke via phone from the capitol with Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bechtesh.
So when the Republicans vote against reallocating that money, what is their reason for that?
So in the hearing, they did not give clear reasons for their no votes. And so I would have to guess at where they're coming from, which is something I try to avoid to do with my colleagues. I'm not sure why they didn't support it. There certainly wasn't a definitive reason given, and there wasn't any testimony against the bill in its hearing.
But you see overall the trend being toward eventually the whole state house being in support of getting broadband into these rural areas?
I believe that the entire General Assembly is for, and the governor's office as well, that we have 100 lawmakers plus one governor that really want to wire the entire state. Now, that becomes directly in conflict with votes that don't pass these bills that have no opposition. So, we always have to look at a mix of politics and policy. The support seems to be there for the policy, but I've been disappointed when politics have trumped the policy of getting all of Colorado wired.
I don't see how it would be a good political move for those who are voting against it, to go back and tell their constituents, we're not going to connect you to the rest of the world. We're not going to let you be part of the same online shopping or online selling or communication with your loved ones. You know, it just seems like a really hard sell to vote against your bills.
It is, I think, a hard sell. What was a political tactic that was pulled in the building this year is they sent these bills on rural broadband to be heard by urban lawmakers. And so, you know, again, we see a political tactic trumping the overall advancement of the state.
I mean, there must be some kind of interest behind shooting this down.
When you see these votes that don't make sense, it's because they're totally making 100% political decisions. They're coming after a seat that is, you know, a seat that they might want in a couple years. So
maybe it would look like you didn't get anything done. You couldn't pass a bill. We can throw her out of District 5 or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that's the message they're probably trying to build.
The full conversation with State Senator Carrie Donovan and reporter Allison Bechtesh is online at aspenpublicradio.org.
Spring calving season is in full swing, and recent weather patterns keep ranchers on their toes. Elizabeth spent the day on a local ranch and brings us this report.
Mount Sobris and Capitol Peak loom over McCabe Ranch, home to 450 head of cattle. This spring, the peaks are snow-capped, but the fields and pastures are dry and teeming with activity. It's peak calving season, and Brad Day, who runs McCabe Ranch with his wife Nikki, is driving me around in his truck, checking on cows in several different pastures. We are hundreds of yards back from a field with younger cows.
So see that cow right there? She's going to calve here in an hour or so. That's why she's pacing around looking like that.
She does look nervous, with her tail sticking straight out behind her, sniffing the ground.
You don't want to stress her out when she's trying to do this. This is her one job in life, is to have a calf and raise it and stay paired up.
So Day leaves her alone to do her job and goes to check on the other animals. About 80% of the cows will give birth in a 40-day period in the early spring. Day says they are just coming out of the busiest time, when about 15 calves are born daily. And as always,
the weather kind of dictates how we operate. I mean, period.
This spring, Day says, has been a calving paradise. Lots of sunshine and a quick snowmelt mean the fields are dry and warm, and even the nights have been mild. Brad and Nikki and two employees take turns checking on the cows every couple of hours, day and night. For the most part, it's been smooth sailing, but one big blizzard in early March brought snow and winds between 50 and 80 miles per hour to the ranch. Jeff Monabone works for the Days.
And you can imagine, you know, a freshly born calf, they come out and they're all slimy and wet. When the wind's blowing like that, it just cuts right through them, you know. I mean, they don't even have a chance to warm back up.
So they have to move quickly in bad weather, checking in at all hours and making sure the cow takes care of the calf immediately.
I mean, it's a matter of minutes before the calf will freeze down to the ground and never get up. So we gotta really be on them all the time when it's cold.
If all goes well, the calf will be born naturally, cleaned off by the mom, and begin nursing right away for those antibody-rich nutrients. If not, Nikki Day will step in.
I feel like I'm a bovine nurse midwife, you know? It's not really a degree, but maybe it should be one.
She patiently encourages a bond between mother and calf. It can take some time, but again, Nikki says, taking care of that calf is the cow's one job, and then they're off to a life of leisure. These are low-stress cows. They are not confined and never given antibiotics unless they develop an infection. Brad Day says this is just good practice, the kind of ranch they run. It's also necessary because many of these calves are destined for regional Whole Foods, and they need a special certification for the high-end grocer. Day checks in on herds spread across the ranch's 1,000 acres before we return to the laboring cow. She still hasn't given birth, and after a couple of hours, Brad and Nikki decide it's time to step in and help. Brad prepares chains, and Nikki leads the cow into the calving barn. The barn is an old gym from Camp Hale, where soldiers in the 10th Mountain Division got in shape to fight overseas. It was relocated to Old Snowmass in the late 60s, and is now used for a different kind of workout. Day and Monamone use chains to pull the calves' front legs for several minutes, finally delivering a large male calf. It's messy work, but after a moment, the cow turns and starts licking her calf, making low sounds.
It's always good to see anytime you gotta mess with them like that, that she turns right around and mothers the calf. But to hear her talking to her and licking them off is all you can ask for.
This calf will gain strength in the next weeks and head up Capitol Creek in late May to graze for the summer on Forest Service land near the base of Capitol Peak and Mount Sopris. The Day's cows are a select breed. They need to be hardy enough to survive at elevations up to about 11,000 feet. And while this has been a charmed spring for calving, the recent warm weather isn't all good news.
Right now, one of our biggest concerns, just for, and I'm sure everybody else is the same way, is worried that that snow is going to melt too fast. It's hard to grow grass and irrigate and make hay for next year with no water, you know? It's just so darn warm.
But for now, they'll enjoy the sun and hope for a cool, wet June up on the mountain.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Claire Woodcock.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. To hear the show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. News director Carolyn Zachariasen talks with a panel of local journalists about the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.